name's Robbie, and I'm an alcoholic. Wow. Woo. The 33rd annual Gopher State Roundup. Where are we at? Minnesota. Woo. Wow. I've never seen a conference as excited as you guys. Gopher State Roundup, the committee, you guys just really, really rock. You agree? Oh, wow. Oh. Oh. The welcome my wife and I received from the moment we have arrived up until right now has been awesome. Oh, Dr. Pat, the board chair, thank you so much. What an honor to be asked to speak at such an event like this. There is 6,591 folks here. That is awesome. Oh, wow. And I am telling you, I've just had a great, great weekend. My host, Eric's sitting over here. Eric has been awesome. He's been there when I wanted him and not there when I don't want him. And that's what you want in the host. He just got me now, I haven't had a drink, a drug, or a mind or mood altering substance for 22 years, except for quad vente lattes. And Eric just got me from Starbucks. Thank you, sir. That was awesome. That was great. And his wife, Sissy. I'll tell you why I love Sissy, his wife. She took my wife to the mall this afternoon. That was so cool, Sissy. That was so awesome. And everybody say hi to Bunny. Say hi, Bunny. Wave. That's my wife. My wife of almost 10 years now, and every once in a while when I get asked to do something like this, I try to bring her along, and I just want to let you know from the podium, I've never done this before. I love you very much. I need to let you guys know we have a beautiful little daughter named Allison Ann. She's 7 years old. Notice the initials. And she's daddy's little girl. And I'm going to talk about her tonight. And just, I just had a great time. Now, I'm from Jersey, okay? Okay, we got four wise guys here. Good. You guys keep it quiet, all right? So anyway, I'm from Jersey. I was born and raised in Philadelphia. So I want you guys to make me feel welcome, okay? I want you all, on the count of three, say, how you doing? Okay, you ready? Hold on, that's not a joke. You ready? One, two, three. I'm doing good. I'm doing real good. And the Sopranos really blew our cover, man. We had a thing going in Jersey, and all of a sudden the Sopranos came on and let everybody know about it. That horrible HBO thing. Okay. My home group is the Stagecoach group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're from we're in a little town called Ocean View, New Jersey. I like you guys. Everybody says, are you afraid to speak in front of 6,000 people? I'm saying, no matter what I say, they'll react. It's great. I have no problem. You guys are a great crowd. Look at that. It's so easy being a speaker. So I told you my home group. I'm very active in my home group. My home group has 5 meetings a day, Monday through Friday. And on Saturday and Sunday, we have 6 meetings a day. So if you're ever in southern New Jersey, come look me up. I'll get you to one of our meetings, and you'll have a great time. My sobriety date, now you can cheer, is November 1st of 1983. Woo! Oh. I'm excited, too. I really am. I've been sober. I've been a card-carrying, flag-waving, parade-leading member of Alcoholics Anonymous since November 1st of 1983, and I love it. 100%. Now, you're new people. You don't have to... Not everybody's like me. Okay? But stick around, and we're going to get to you one day at a time. I saw you... Oh, the sobriety countdown, Doc. That was great. I saw the new people. I saw the people with 1 day out there, and 2 days, and 3 days. And I'll tell you, you guys are in for the ride of your life. Hold on tightly, baby. Hold on. Tonight, obviously, I'm going to give you my experience, my strength, and my hope to the best of my ability, one day at a time. You know, I'll just do the best I can. I give the AA message in the only way I know how, and that's to tell my story. And it's just the only way I know how to do it. I'm not up here to give a 12-step dissertation, okay? Nothing wrong with that. I've done that at different weekends. But I'm up here tonight to tell you guys what happened when I walked in. And there were people here that practiced these principles that Dr. Bob and Bill W. so aptly put in front of us. You know, and what happened when I finally came into AA and there was hands outreached to me. A young guy. You know, I was a 3-time convicted felon when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. My own family wanted to have absolutely nothing to do with me when I entered Alcoholics Anonymous. And you people just extended yourselves. And you guys hugged me and said, "How do you take your coffee, kid? Have a seat. The meeting's getting ready to begin." And I want to talk about that. I want to talk about my entry into Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I want to tell you about how I found my God. How I found my God right here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And He's here tonight. And I'm going to share them with you. If you're new and you're out there and you're not really too sure about that God yet, my gosh, I'm going to give you the permission right now. Borrow mine. Because He's awesome. My God is awesome. He's omnipotent. He's all-powerful. He's all-loving. And so important to people like us. He's all-merciful. There is nothing that you have done that we haven't already done or tried to do. There's nothing here that you can't be forgiven for that you've done. You know, it's just a matter of just asking, just asking. So tonight I'm going to talk about that a little bit. You know, I'll talk a little bit about where recovery's taken me. You know, it's just taken me to awesome places, just awesome places. Let's begin with my first drink. I picked up my first drink on the way to a Yes concert. For the guy with 61 years, that's a rock and roll group, all right? So I'm on the way to a Yes concert. I'm in the back of a Woody Wagon, man. We're drinking Southern Comfort, Cindy. Or who was a Southern Comfort person? Oh, yes, Mary Claire. I was drinking Southern Comfort and eating nacho cheese Dorito corn chips. You know you got a good conference when they cheer for nacho cheese Dorito corn chips. Yes, indeedy. So they're good going down, but they're not good coming up. So it's roundabout. Roundabout's on, man. I can't sing it. I apologize, Angie, but roundabout was on, and they're just, and the light show is going on, and all of a sudden I projectile vomit on this dude in front of me, right? It wasn't really funny for him. And I passed out. My first drunk, I passed out. Like a lot of us do. And I came to on my lawn. A couple of my buddies from Philadelphia, you know how they are, get the heck out of the car when you get to your house, you know what I mean? And I woke up on my lawn, and I walked into my house at 12 and a half years old, between 8th grade and 9th grade summer. And my mom looked at me. My mom never went to sleep. Ever. Ever, as far as I can tell. And I walked into my house, and she said, "What's wrong with you?" And I'll have you know, I went to 8 years of Catholic schooling. The Sisters of St. Joseph were just awesome. I love when I'm in the presence. I've met Sister Joan here, and I was just a good boy. I clapped the erasers. I was an altar boy. I rang the bells when the priest raised the chalice and the host. I was a good boy. For all you Allen honors, that was pre-alcohol. I had all first honors in all the classes. I did great, and then I picked up the drink of alcohol, and all bets were off. Like all of us, the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Once I pick up a drink of alcohol, all bets are off, man. I don't care what my thinking is. I don't care what my plans are. It doesn't matter. We read it tonight and how it works, and please help me out with it if you will. Remember, we deal with alcohol. That was fair. Let's try it one more time. Remember, we deal with alcohol. And without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is? God. May you find Him now. That's strong. Now I know sometimes you hear those people say, "I've been sober so long, it ain't about alcohol no more. It's about my thinking." Well, that's great. But I know what we just read and how it works. And it says, remember, we deal with alcohol. And for the new people, we deal with that all the time. And we're going to talk about it. We'll talk about it here tonight. I'm not afraid of it. I hear people call when I'm getting ready to talk about a drunkalog. And I'll tell you, I lived this story. This is no drunkalog. This ain't no war story either. Okay? This is a story that I lived as an alcoholic. There's guys, young guys like me, that end up statistics in prisons. That end up statistics on the streets. You know what I mean? My mom and dad, when they heard the phone ring at 2 in the morning, they didn't know if it was going to be the city morgue, if it was going to be the hospital, or if it was going to be me just asking if I could come home and get something to eat. So this is serious stuff. I take this what happened to me very, very seriously. And if you're one of those members that just want to hear about recovery, you can leave now. Because I'm going to tell you the whole deal. No offense. I'm going to give you the whole deal tonight. And it says we have to. Our new people, they got to hear. Sometimes they see us in our suits and they see us in our new 4x4s. And they see us, you know, whip out that wad when the basket goes around the 20s and 100s. And they're like, man, I ain't like them. You know what I mean? I remember when I was new like that. But then all of a sudden, that person with that Cadillac Escalade and in that three-piece suit coming home from work, all of a sudden will raise their hand and they'll tell their story in AA. And all of a sudden, I see the new person say, yeah, me too. Just like Bill D., AA number 3, when he was on the bed, when these two wonderful men came to Charlie Towns Hospital, and they were on the bed, and they shared their message with Bill D., man, and they told him, a stockbroker and a proctologist, a hiney doctor, let's call it what it is, and they shared their story with Bill D., and Bill D. was like, yeah, right. But then they came in and again, they did it again, and they shared their story with him. And the third day, they're coming down the hallway, and Bill D.'s wife's there, and he said, Honey, these are the guys I was telling you about. They know where I've been. And that's so powerful for me. I love doing 12-step work. There's nothing like it. Oh, I get to, every Tuesday night, I get to go to a place called the Barnabas House. And it's a Christian halfway house down by me in Wildwood, New Jersey. And I get to go there and share the message of AA every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. No matter what's going on, I'm there, right, honey? She said, mm-hmm. And it's about carrying the message. You know, I'm a real AA member. Man, everybody know what a real AA member is? A real AA member is a member that has a home group in Alcoholics Anonymous. A real AA member is a member that sits up front. All the front row people, raise your hand, please. Right here. All you people on the floor, raise your hand. That's the sick row. Okay. Everybody in the rear, everybody against the wall, raise your hand. That's the inventory row. I think that's so funny. When you're a speaker, you get to abuse people. I just love it. So anyway, where was I? So anyway, where was I? I'm serious. What? Oh, so I'm at Charlie Towns Hospital. Well, I'm in 1935. I'm getting there, gang. Sitting up front, I'm a real member of AA. That's where I was. Thank you. And I got a position in my home group. I'm our anniversary and picnic coordinator, right, honey? We have a picnic every year in my home group. We get about 350 to 400 people. Last year, we had Bobby C. from Philadelphia share. And that's what I do. I get a whole committee of young people, and I try to get them in the middle of AA, like we heard all our speakers here talk about this weekend. You know, we have a big anniversary as well at this big hall, and we all get dressed up like this, and we celebrate AA. We celebrate freedom from the bondage of alcohol. We celebrate the 12 steps to freedom. What a great topic for this convention. I'm one of those guys that have taken the 12 steps. I've lived the 12 steps. You know, when I had 2 and 3 years of sobriety, I'm a young guy, I got sober 22. Man, I want to go out to the clubs with the rest of the sober guys. You know what I mean? You know, and where am I at? At a tradition workshop. Yeah, that's me. Woo. Yeah. Where am I at? An 8th and 9th step meeting. Woo, that should be fun. But guess what? I did it. And I had sponsors telling me, just do it. Just keep on doing the next right thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when you're ready, the right gal will come into your life one day at a time. And that eventually happened. But I always put first things first in AA. You know, I notice people always say, don't do what I did when I was new. You know, and I'll tell you what. By the time I got to AA, man, I was so beaten down. by this illness, by this malady, that I was willing to do anything that you people told me, especially you old-timers. I'm going to end with a story about old-timers. That just means you old-timers. Can we give a hand to all the old-timers in the room? I mean, it's the old-timers. When I came into AA at 22 years old, that I watched you guys. You don't think we were, but I'm watching you guys. And I'm watching you guys talk about your family. And I'm watching you guys talk about your real life and your work. You know what I mean? And I'm watching you help people like me. And I wanted to be like that someday. Just someday. And today, just I got a little bit of that today, and I just love it. So thank you, old-timers. All you old-timers in the room. You know, thank you so much. Willards and the Bobs. And I know you're all here, man, and you guys mean so much to us. Please keep coming back. Please don't get so well that you don't come back to AA anymore. You know, this AA, by the way, let's talk about this. This AA thing ain't about getting mine and getting out of here. You with me? And if you're not with me, let me show you what I mean by that. You know, I got sober in 1983, and I got sober with a lot of guys and girls, and most of them aren't here right now. They're successful. They've received their college degrees. They've gotten married. You know, they've gotten wonderful careers and wonderful families, and there's nothing wrong with that. But they become AA thieves, and they stop coming back to the place that saved their life. And thank God you old-timers aren't like that. Thank God you old-timers keep coming back and showing us that even as you get older and you stay sober, that there's a place for us still to go to. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for that. From the bottom of my heart. Oh. So Mom and Dad sent me to a private Catholic prep high school. That means all guys, all right? I'd have been okay if they had some girls there. No girls, all guys, you know? And all the guys I'm going there with to school with, they're taking trigonometry and calculus and chemistry and physics. Couldn't even spell physics, you know what I mean? And I'm drinking. Now, when I drink, I'm not in the school. School? Very funny. You know what I mean? Where's the keg party, man? You know what I mean? I partied in garages. We listened to Led Zeppelin. I like that, Angie. We listened to Zeppelin. When you would come out of a garage in Philadelphia, first the smoke came out. Whoa. And then we all stumbled out. Yo, wow. Cool, solid, man. What's up? So all you young people, if you're here and you got your hat on backwards, you're in the right place. I was young, man, when I came in here, and I'm still here. I got the tie on, but that might happen, too. It's not a requirement. So I went through high school, and I did the best I could. You know what I mean? But what was I doing? I was drinking on a daily basis. So one night, I come home drunk, as I always did. You know, my mom's like a black belt Al-Anon, and I mean that with love. I really do. She just is. She's just a black belt Al-Anon girl. And I come in one night. It's only about 7 o'clock on a Saturday night. I was doing a quick pit stop. You know what I mean? I was coming in to get changed real fast to go to another party. And I'm soused. I'm 16 years old, and I'm soused. I'm just out there. And guess what? This is not good. When you come home and you're drunk, and all of a sudden there's an intervention. What's up with that? I mean, my mom's there, my grandmom's there, the local priest is there, my little sister's there, my dad's there, Uncle Joe's there, and Aunt Mildred. Oh, and when you're drunk, that's not good. I mean, I guess it's okay if you're sober. Great. If you're a counselor, great. Just do it honest when we're sober at least. Give us a break, right? So I'm drunk, and now I'm sitting there, and I got the bob going on, you know, and you're a little drunk, and you're just going like this, and you're like, you think they notice I'm bobbing, you know what I mean? But I mean, like, everybody else, but if you bob, everybody else stays normal. So I'm bobbing, and they're all looking at me, and oh, horrible. And here comes the learning experience. So to get everybody telling me, you know, what a good boy I was when I was in first, eighth grade, an altar boy, and I was a quarterback on the football team. And boy, oh boy, what a good boy you were, Robbie. And all of a sudden alcohol comes and you become that, you know, that Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, and we love you and we want you to get help. So we're going to get you to watch Scared Straight. You like that? Were you in it, dude? Man, I'll tell you. Let me tell you something. It was, this dude looks like he was in it. Look at all the tattoos. Jeez. So anyway, Scared Straight was all these penitentiary guys and they're doing life in the penitentiary. And they're helping young thugs like me so I don't end up in prison. So every Saturday night I'm penitent and I'm staying home and I'm watching Scared Straight. You know, my mom didn't read the book. And like, you can't scare a guy like me, you know? And so anyway, I'm watching Scared Straight three Saturdays in a row. I'm missing all the boys. I'm missing all the girls. I'm missing good games. I'm missing all the parties. And anyway, what do you think I did on the fourth Saturday? Drank. I got drunk. Why? Because I couldn't remember what it was like. You know, the day before, the week before, the month before. I got good and drunk again. And once again, I come in during Johnny Carson, and she's up. What's wrong with you? I'm like, nothing, Mom. I'm just having a few beers with the guys, man. Please give me a break. And she would never give me a break. She was on me. So finally, I graduated from this private Catholic high school in 1979. Now, I went out with this gal all through high school, and she went to the private Catholic girls' high school right down the street, and her name was Barbie. So me and all my boys, Bones, Lumpy, and Killer, we go down to senior week, all right? We go down to senior week, and we're getting the place ready and all. And then this is in the old days when, you know, we had our own hotel room, and the girls had their own hotel room, right? And how's the signer doing over there? We okay over there? Yeah, because I'm from Jersey. Am I all right? I just got done speaking in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I went to a midnight meeting after I shared, and the signer looked like she had a resentment to me, man. She had her hand in a dish of ice water. I was getting ready to share, and I looked at her, and I just put my hand down. But I want to thank the signer, and I want to thank all our special needs folks that are here tonight. We love you all, and I know that Bob and Bill that are looking down upon us right now are very, very happy that we're making the message available to everybody. Thank you, Gopher State. Great call on that one. So I'm down at senior week, and I'm with Bones, Lumpy, and Killer, and we're having fun, man. We're drinking and just doing all the stuff you do as a young drunk. We're just having a blast. Now the girls come down. So I go over to the hotel room with Barbie, and I knock on the door. And she says, come in. And I go in, my hat's on backwards. Now I'm listening to AC/DC on a highway to hell. All you young guys, yeah. The old guy in the front row saying, oh, please don't sing that, dude. So I listen to Highway to Hell. I got the hat on backwards, got the Walkman on. And she looks at me and she says, sit down. My wife heard the message before. Sorry, babe. Sit down, she said. So I sat down, and she looked at me, and she said, Robbie, you drink too much for me. Now, all you girls can help me finish this sentence, and I'm going to go in a different direction. And she even knew that one. We hate that, girls. I'm going to go in a different direction. What direction you're going in, let us know at some point. So anyway, so she says, I'm going to go in a different direction. And I know I'm in trouble because when I got to the hotel room, all her little girlfriends were all like one head on top of the other looking at a bedroom. They were supporting her. Now, how do I know I'm an alcoholic? Listen to this, guys. You're like this. Because like not at one point did I say, oh, Barb, we've had some wonderful experiences together. It almost sounds funny. And I think I'll stop drinking for this week. You know, what I just said, really? And I turned around and I walked away, just like in a Western song. And I walked back to the hotel. I found Bones, Lumpy, and Killer. And I said, boys, guess what? We're like, yo, Robbie, what's up, dude? I thought you were going out with Barbie. And I'm like, she broke up with me. And I was downtrodden, man. And they were all like, yeah! Great! Let's party, right? And just like John Belushi in Animal House, I was like, yeah, that's right. Let's party. Boy, oh boy, we got booze. And so that four-year relationship in 4 minutes was out the door. We already said why. Because of alcohol. It's that simple, you know? It's just that simple. Got home from senior week, and here's where the bank comes in. Got home from senior week, and I got a job at a bank. Now, I've never been in trouble with the law, Back in the 70s when you were drinking in Philadelphia, if you got pulled over, the cops just took your beer. That's all. They took your beer and said, get out of here. I said, can I have the beer? They said, no. I said, okay, just checking. And so I never got locked up. I was just a drunk. Why am I going to get locked up for drinking? So anyway, so now all of a sudden I'm at the bank and I became a bank teller, right? I'm strong, man. I got the haircut, sure. I got the suit on, right? I'm a Catholic kid. I know how to look the part, right? And all of a sudden the vice president sits down with me the first day and he says, Robbie, we are going to send you to Temple University at Broadding, Columbia. All right? And we're going to pay for it if you get A's and B's. And I said, awesome, sir. Thank you very much. There's only one requirement, Rob. I said, what is that? You have to make it through 90 days of probation. If he hadn't said that, I'd been okay. Everything was going good for the first couple of days. About the fifth day, this little, and I was with like four bank teller girls, and one was better looking than the next one. I had it made. I'm 18 years old. You know what I mean? Hormones are racing. I got these four beautiful bank tellers that I'm working with, and they said to me, Robbie, we're going over to Froggy's after work. Would you like to come? Now, 17th of Walnut in Philadelphia, there's this tap room, and it's called Froggy's, and there's this green neon frog that goes across the thing the whole day, and it says, Froggy's, leap on in. I never leapt on out, believe that. But I thought to myself, let me be cordial. I want to get to know the new employees. I think this is politically correct. And I said, sure, I'll go. So I go over to Froggy's after work. And I've never been to a tap room. I drank in, you know what I mean? I drank on the corner. I drank at the playground. I drank in basements. I drank in cars. You know what I mean? The cops come, phew. You know, I mean, I never drank in a tap room. I don't know what that's like. I had no clue. So anyway, so we go to Froggy's, and here it goes. Now, I'm not glamorizing alcohol. Get that out of your mind before you even start thinking like that. I'm telling my story, and this is how it happened. Some people in AA are able to sanitize their story to make everybody love them. Not me. Okay? If you're like that, God bless you. I'm not like that. This is what really happened. Alcohol romanced me. This young guy, it told me how awesome it was. And I got to that bar, and I saw those bottles, and I saw those mirrors, and I smelled that special smell. Mm-hmm, you know it, that special urine, alcohol, dried up smell. The Al-Anon girl's like, this guy ain't right. Anyway, you know what's funny about that? I spoke at an Al-Anon convention recently. I was like the token AA guy, right, on whatever, Saturday afternoon. So I did my AA talk, right? And this is amazing. At the end of my story, I'm going to say, and this is where my mom and dad kicked me out of the house, and there was thunderous applause. What's up with that? I told them I was sober for 22 years, and they're like, woo-hoo, keep on knitting, you know, crocheting, big crap. We've been sober all our lives, dude. You say it here and it's a big deal. I say, and my mom and dad kicked me out of the house and they're like, no way. Did they really? I like that. You know, I want love. I want understanding. I'm sensitive. If you're a newcomer and you're sensitive, you fit in. I love the guy that gets out of prison. He's about 6'7". He's got stubble all over. He's got that motorcycle thing on, born to ride, live to kill. And all of a sudden he's like, I ain't sharing. Only in AA. And usually his name's Spider. Ain't that the truth? Oh, gosh. So anyway, I'm drinking a Froggy's every night. All of a sudden, the girls get up at happy hour, and they're like, okay, we'll see you tomorrow. I'm like, where are you going? They're like, we're starting a field. I'm like, you have to drink right through that feeling. Just bang right through it and get to the other side. You know what I mean? Just get to the other side and you'll be okay. And that was me. I drank on the last call. Lights flickering on and out. I still get wigged out when they put the lights on and off at an AA clubhouse. Oh, stop that, dude. That's a flashback. Oh, jeez. So I'm drinking at Froggy's. Now, bank tellers don't make a lot of money, I'll have you know. So I started giving myself gradual raises. Mm-hmm. keen alcoholic mind, we call that in AA. So I'm doing good. I know everybody at Froggy's. We're all drinking well on Robbie's new paycheck. And one day I show up for work. You know, we don't think about the repercussions. You know what I'm saying? And one day I show up for work, and there's two guys with, like, hair like mine. But unlike me, they got guns on their holsters and handcuffs coming out their rear end. And they said, is your name Robert Walker? And I said, yes, it is. I thought it was college intake from Temple. I said, yes, I'm here. Are we ready? And they put my hands against the thing, and they patted me down. And they told me, you know, they read me my Miranda rights. And they took me out of the bank in a federal car. Now, on page 16 of the big book, Bill Wilson says something really awesome. By the way, I got my own big book in 12 and 12. Who's got their own big book in 12 and 12? Raise your hand. If there's anybody sitting next to you or near you and they're not an Al-Anon member and they don't have their hand up, get with them, man. Get with them. Just my opinion. And it says on page 16 that, you know, newcomers will be shocked at our seeming worldliness and levity or our humor. I know when I was new and I would hear a speaker like me talking, I could pick out the new people. You're just sitting there like this. You're not going to laugh. That guy ain't funny, you know. And but then Bill says, but just underneath it, there's a deadly earnestness. Let's get into a little of that deadly earnestness here. I got taken out of that bank and I got sent away for a year to a penal institution on State Road in Philadelphia. If anybody's listening to this from Philadelphia, I was in the House of Correction. All right. Now, for a year, I did the practicing alcoholic prayer. Help me with it if you know it. Oh, dear God, help me get out of this one and I'll... Absolutely. And I did every night in jail. Get me away from Spider and Bubba and Jose. And I swear I'll never do it again, Father. I love you. I would go to Christian Bible deals. You know, I would speak in tongues. You know, I'd wash your feet or whatever. No offense to the Christians. I'd do anything. I'll go to Seventh-day Adventist. Anything you got, I'm going. I got a mansion just over the hilltop. Let's sing it out, baby. I want help. I want the Lord. I want to stay sober. Right up. Straight on. Right up, man. So what do you think I did when I got out? That's right. I drank. I drank because I can't remember. I'm an alcoholic. I can't remember that night laying in the jail cell what it was like. So I got in a year, I got out and I started drinking. And I started living on the streets of Philadelphia. And I started stealing cars. How about that? Okay. I started burglarizing places. How about that? I started doing anything that was necessary to get money to have a drink of alcohol. It's just the way it was. I wasn't raised that way. You just sort of graduate into that if you're a guy like me. My mom and dad, I mean, they had that Al-Anon deal down. They say, get out. We don't stop calling here. My little sister would say it. She was a freshman in high school when her big brother was going through the prison system. And I would call home. Hey, it's me. Stop calling here, Robbie. You don't have a family here no more. Stop it. Leave us alone. So if you've ever heard that, man, you are so in the right place. It's okay. You're in the right place. So let me bring you to my last drunk. My last drunk, I'm in a Hickory Farms. And you know what that is? From the laughter, I'm assuming you do. It's a cheese and salami store. Hey, the downward spiral. I started with a bang. I ended up with a cheese and salami down my pants. Whatever. So I, whatever. So here I am. I'm like 21 years old, in and out of the prison system, man, in and out of rehabs, every rehab in the world. And now I'm just hungry. It's a Sunday afternoon. It's a big mall. And I go in this Hickory Farms. Now, if you're an alcoholic, you got to case out the joint first. So I case out the joint. There's this little blonde in there. She's about 4'9", about 82 pounds. And I looked at her and I thought, I can take her. Straight up. You know what I mean? There's a dude like you in there, dude. I would have been like, okay, I'm cool. And I looked at this little blonde. I knew I could take her. And I went in there, hips looking cool. And I take my salami and cheese and I put it down my pants. And I'm trying to walk out. Watch this. I put the salami and cheese down my pants. Man, she does that good. Woo! So I put the salami and cheese down my pants, right? And I'm trying to leap. And this little blonde flies through the air. and tackles me. I couldn't believe it. Incomprehensible demoralization. That wasn't the worst part. Then the mall police came. By a show of hands, has anybody ever been locked up by mall police? Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Horrible. Pitiful. Did you ever see those guys? I gotta say hi when I go to malls. How you doing? How you doing, sir? I say hi to all of them today. I feel so bad. So anyway, I got locked up by mall police, and I went away to a place called Chester County Farms Prison in Chester, Pennsylvania, for 1 to 2 years. Now, I didn't realize salami and cheese was that high on the list, personally. But what happened was, I was one of those dudes, FTA, failure to appear. Let me tell you what I mean. Dr. Pat called me up about 9 months ago and asked me to come here and share, and I got my daytimer out in my office, and I put it down, you know what I mean? May 26th to the 28th, Gopher State Roundup 2006, Dr. Pat. Man, I'm speaking. I put it in my daytimer. Now, when I would go to court and a judge would say to me, you know, you have to come back here, young man, in 2 weeks, I did not carry a daytimer. Does that make any sense to you? I'm a drunk. You know what I mean? I'm a drunk. I might have a can opener in my pocket. I might have a tap. But I ain't got a daytimer. So if you let me out, I'd be like, okay, I'll be there on time. I'll be early. See you in 2 weeks. See you, plaintiff. See you, bailiff. See you, jurors. I'm in another state in 2 weeks, man, straight up. So when I got caught with the salami and cheese, I got in trouble for other stuff that I had done. I'm in Chester County Farms Prison, 1-2. And after about 2 weeks, I got in a fight over some smokes. And that's not funny, man. You guys will laugh at anything. So this dude beat me up. That's real funny. And so this dude beats me up, right? And I end up on maximum security. I'm on maximum security of this minimum security jail for stealing salami and cheese. I still don't see the funniness in that. Anyway, whatever. So I'm up there and they're bringing me my food. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden one day I did some inappropriate things with the guards. It just says we should share in a general way what we used to be like. I'll choose to play that card now. In a general way, I did some inappropriate things with the correction officers. And within about an hour or so, I'm listening. I'm just having a good Saturday night in my jail. And all I hear is... And I'm looking out. I get my mirror. And I'm looking out the cell. I'm like, man, what's going on here? They got their sword outfits on. And they stopped in front of my cell. That's not a good thing. And they said something. If anybody's in corrections, I know Tom I from North Carolina is one of my AA giants. And they said this. They say, stand down. And when they say stand down and you're in a prison, that means get on your belly. Spread eagle, don't say nothing, don't breathe, don't even look at us, and we're still going to beat you up. You know what I mean? And I'm an alcoholic. You tell me to stand up, I'm sitting down. And so I went one last time, you know what I mean, one last time with these guys. And I lasted like 3.5 seconds. I wasn't as tough as Angie. And what happened? I got beat within an inch of my life. And I woke up in the hole of Chester County Farms Prison. If anybody knows what a hole is, it's the only thing in the floor is a hole. And there's three walls and there's bars. You know what I mean? And there's usually the dungeon part of the prison. And you're coming out when they say you're coming out. You're eating when they say you're eating. All right? You can go to the bathroom if you want. Maybe we'll bring you toilet paper. There's no rack. You know what I mean? There's no sink. See, that's what happens to a guy like me. I woke up around this little hole, all right? And I was hurting. And see, up to that point in my life, I could always bounce back, man. I'm an alcoholic. I'm resilient. I'll bounce back. My dad would chase me down the block because I was trying to steal his car. I'll bounce back. I get in a fight outside this penalty box club room, you know what I mean? I'll bounce back. I'll find a drink. My girlfriend breaks up with me. I'll bounce back. It's just the way it is. And when I woke up, ladies and gentlemen, in Chester County Farms Prison, in the hole, in early 1983, Not only did I not bounce back, I made that decision that there was no reason for me to be alive anymore. And there's nothing funny about suicide. In the 12 and 12, it says, God abhors suicide. But see, I got to that point where I know what it's like a millisecond before ending my life. Where I got to that point in my life where I absolutely hated me. Now, many people in my life, I could tell by their actions towards me, did not like me. But I could always, that could just water off my back. I'm drinking, I'll forget about that. But that, when I woke up in Chester County Farms Prison in a hole, I just couldn't bounce back, man. And I just hated me so bad. And this dude opened up my little slot that I heard about today, and I got that little thing of food, and I started cutting my arm up and down, where I just couldn't move any longer, and I passed out. I passed out. And I wanted to pass out into the ages. I believe me with all my soul when I tell you that. I did not want to come back. I did not want to live this life anymore. Why? Because of alcohol. All right? It wasn't because of my inner child. It wasn't because my mom smacked me in my bare rear end at 7 years old. No, it wasn't my upbringing. You know, it wasn't my girlfriend. It wasn't my stock in life. It was the booze. And it got into me, and it's a terrible, terrible deal. And I didn't want to go on any longer. You know? And I tried to kill myself. And I woke up in the infirmary of this prison with gauze wrapped around my arm. And they gave me some dignity, and they put an orange jumpsuit on me. And I was in this bed, and I was tied down to the bed. You know, that's where alcohol takes me. And that's what I got to talk about every time I share my story. My sponsor tells his story about that rageful alcoholic. And he comes home from work at night. And his little dog, his little puppy comes up to him. And he's looking for a bone or a little thing of water. And the rageful alcoholic looks at him and says, "Get out of my way." And he smacks him in the mouth. And the little dog runs away. And the next night, that practicing rageful alcoholic comes home. And that little puppy dog walks up to him and says, "He doesn't know any better, folks. He just wants a bone and wants some water, wants some love from his master." And his master says, "I told you last night, get out of my way," smack. And he kicks him in the face. The little dog runs away. And the third night, that practicing rageful alcoholic comes home. And the dog looks at him and in fear and in fright runs in a corner and just starts shaking, knowing what's going to happen if he gets in that crazy alcoholic's way. And see, when those guards came to my cell door in Chester County Farms Prison, I started just moaning and screaming. I couldn't go anywhere, and I was like, "Leave me alone. Please don't hurt me any longer." And I'll never forget to this very second, one of the correction officers came into my cell, and he put his hand on my shoulder, and he says to me, "I'm here to help you, son. I'm not here to hurt you, son. It's okay." And I was just shaking. Ladies and gentlemen, the fight was over. The fight was over. And he put some stuff around me, and he shuffled me out of that room. I guess I was, I don't know, salami and cheese thief. And I get shuffled out of that room. And I go to a hearing inside Chester County Farms Prison. And in this hearing, they remanded me to a place called Haverford State Hospital. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand if you've been to a state mental institution. But what I will say to you is I have no jokes for that whatsoever, because I've been there. I know what it's like to light my smoke on a wall. I know what it's like to be held down by orderlies. One on the back of my neck and one on the back of my back and one holding down my ankles as I'm saying, "Let me go! Get off of me! What's wrong with you? Leave me alone!" That's what alcohol does to me. It makes me, it says, an alcoholic in his cups, Bill writes, is a what? Unlovely creature. I'll make it easier as we go along. He's an unlovely creature. A poor chap in his home committed suicide. And that was me. That's the way I was due to alcohol. I just wanted to die. I didn't want to live any longer. And they took me to a place like that, and they just had to hold me down and shoot stuff in my rear end. Where I just got like... Because I couldn't calm myself down anymore. Alcohol had won the battle, folks. So I'm living on the streets of Philadelphia, and I don't want to hear nothing from nobody. You don't want to be anywhere around me. I didn't hang out with you. I didn't hang out with you. I didn't want no friends. I did my crimes on my own. I rolled by myself. I had no partners. I didn't trust nobody because I didn't trust me. And it happened. My miracle happened. My loving God came into my life. Man, I can't explain this to you, ladies and gentlemen. I can't explain. I can just tell it to you. And these two Philadelphia police officers back in the late and early 1980s, we used to call them pigs. You remember that? And these two police officers came to me. And they put me in the back of the blue paddy wagon, Philadelphia police paddy wagon. And they took me to what they call a 7-Eleven. You guys have 7-Elevens in Minneapolis? What do you got? Oscos or something? Whatever you got. Wawas? You got Wawas? Wawa. Okay, thanks, dude. So they take me to a 7-Eleven, and they say, you, get out of the back of the paddy wagon. That was before police brutality came around. You know, I'm like one of the guys that helped you, all you younger guys with that stuff. They used to just beat us up really bad. I'm thinking, I'm getting beat up by cops. And I'm getting ready. And so I go out there, and I'm ready. They let me out of the back of the paddy wagon. And they said, calm down, brother. Calm down. And they said, open up your hands. I opened up my hands. And they put a whole handful of change in my hands. And they said, go inside. Yeah, man. They said, go inside and talk to the guy inside. And I went inside. I watched the paddy wagon pull away. And I went inside. And this guy extended his hand to me. And he said, my name's George. And I'm an alcoholic. You see, ladies and gentlemen, this guy broke his anonymity with these cops. He was such a proud member of AA. He said, if you ever see any guys that got some booze on their breath and you don't feel like locking them up, bring them to me. I can help them. I got 12-stepped here because a guy broke his anonymity. And he took me to meetings with him. And I'll tell you what, I'm sorry, this is my experience. My first meeting, I knew I'd found my home. There was all those times when I was out there in the streets that I knew nobody knew how I felt. Nobody knows what that feels like. You know, to have to call home and they say to you, no, just stop calling. But I'm saying, but mom, I'm going to change this time. I really am. I swear to God, I'll change. Just let me home. They're like, no, we can't trust you anymore. Because what would I always do? I'd always steal from them at the end. That'd be good for 2 or 3 days. And I'd try to get a job. And then I'd pick up a drink and I would steal from them again. You know, I'd be in rehabs and they'd put me in the middle of rehab and they would tell me what a bad person I was and they would kick me out. I couldn't follow directions. Whatever. That's nothing against rehabs. I know our traditions. I'm a past delegate. Whatever. You know what I mean? But I just had it's just a horrible way to live as an alcoholic. It was horrible. I hated every second of it. But when it presented itself again, I had no choice but to pick up that drink. We call that in AA powerlessness. I'm powerless over the first drink. You know what I mean? And in AA, I finally found hope. Now, I had 5 months not drinking, and I was working step none. Okay? I hope you heard that, new guys. Oh, I'm doing good, and I'm not drinking, man. You're working the steps. Not yet. Easy does it. Twelve steps to freedom. So I'm 5 months sober, working step none, all right? And I robbed a guy, innocently, I will tell you. I robbed a guy in Philadelphia, okay? It just, like the guy puts a shot of whiskey in his drink in the big book. I robbed a guy, whatever. So I robbed a guy. Next thing you know, I got caught, okay? Because I ended up in Kalamazoo, Michigan, drunk, once again. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? And I went on for a couple days and I drank and finally I said the AA entry prayer. And I heard it here. Every single speaker said it. And that is, God, please help me. I was laying in a field in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I asked for help. God, please help me. And this loving, all merciful God didn't care what kind of person I was. He didn't care that I didn't care about nobody except for me. He knew it was the booze. And I got up somehow and I got to this pharmacy. God bless you, Debbie. And all of a sudden, at the pharmacy, I said, do you know where AA is? And this girl looked at me and she said, it's right across the street. And across the street on 933 South Burdick Street in Kalamazoo, Michigan, is the Alano Club. And I walked in the Alano Club on October 31st of 1983. And I swear to you guys, I hated myself. I didn't want to live another day. I just hated myself. I mean, you wouldn't notice that by looking at me because I was like a tough guy, you know, with the leather coat and smoke hanging out my mouth. And I had those euphemisms and all. But I just hated myself deep down inside. I was so afraid of everything. And I asked them if I could come in. And they said, sit down. How do you take your coffee? And a dude named Gangster Bob and Pat sat with me all night. And at the end of the night, yeah, normal AA name, Gangster Bob. And at the end of the night, they said, come back in the morning, Robbie. Come back in the morning. It sounds like you're one of us. And so I slept behind that Alano Club. And then the next morning I came around And on November 1st of 1983, I raised my hand for the first time, for the last time, and I said, I'm back, and I'm here to stay. That's right, man. And I was 22 years old. I was 22 years old, that's all. Thank God I've never had an old timer or an older guy come up to me and said, thank God you didn't have to go through what I went through, kid. Thank God. Because we know you don't do that. We know that, you know, I met somebody at my dinner table tonight that got sober when he was 17. I know all the young people, raise your hand, that got sober around 22 or under. Look at all the hands. That's wonderful. You're in the right place. You are so in the right place. Don't quit before the miracle happens. And I really meant well, but I kind of talk like that Philadelphia deal. You know, I had all those euphemisms. I used the F word about 17 times in one sentence. And whatever. And it's just my story. And I'm out there with lawyers and judges and all these cops and all. And Kalamazoo's a real nice uppity college town. And I was like, I can't say from here, but I was just not talking normally, you know. And after about 3 months, I wasn't drinking. You know, I was going to meetings. I actually started the steps. And all of a sudden, I come into this Alano club, and they look at me and they said, sit down. Yeah, I don't like that, man. And so I sat down. I know something's getting ready to go down. So I sit down, and they says, your attitudes and behaviors are unbecoming to our Alano club. Get out. Well, let me tell you what I was doing, give them some respect here. There was a guy that ran the morning meeting, and he was called Blind Bob, and he was an old-timer, all right? Little hint to the new guy. The group will always side with the blind guy. Now, I did not dislike Blind Bob, but Blind Bob never called on me. And I'm sensitive. I told you that early on. He would never call on me, man. And I just gave him some, I guess, a little hard time. And they kicked me out. Now, here's the message. I sat on that stoop outside the Alano Club, and I had my head down, and it all just started flowing. I didn't know whether I was going to, you know, drink, kill myself. I didn't know what I was going to do. I really didn't know. I had no idea. I had no family. You people were my family. You're all I had. I just didn't know how to act. So when you get some newcomers in here, man, give them some time. You know what I mean? If you're one of those guys or girls, then you're especially blessed, and you can handle people like me, please handle us. Don't let us go, because some of us are a little bit wacky than other people. It says in our first step that glass in hand, our minds are warped into such an obsession and compulsive drinking that only an act of providence, that's right, could remove it from us. So if you see somebody like me, and they're a little bit out there, and they're cursing, and they're, you know, like they're like Angie, you know, she's a tough alcoholic. I wouldn't mess with you. She'd say, I ain't going nowhere. That's what she would have said. But I didn't know what to say. And all of a sudden it happened. My AA angel came out. And it's a guy named Don C. And he's a pig farmer. I never even recognized this brother. And he comes out of this Alano club. And he looked at me. And he said, get in the truck, boy. You ever watch A&E? I do, man. And I'm like, but I didn't have a lot of options. So I got in his truck. Now we're going down the street in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I'm looking over at him. He's got this old blue truck. He got like this chainsaw chain going around his mirror. I'm looking at him thinking, this is not good, dude. You have made a bad decision. So I'm going down the street and he's looking at me and I'm looking at him. And he's got all these tattoos with all these initials on his knuckles. And I'm not going to ask him what they mean. And I'm going down the street and finally we get to his house. And he introduces me to his wife named Rhonda and his two boys, Brian and Dallas. I had Brian and Dallas up for our wedding. They watched our house during our wedding when we went away to Ocho Rios, Jamaica. And he said, Robbie's going to be staying with us for a little while. And this guy, Don C, used to take me out and says, oh, you people that can do this, I so love you. My own parents won't even take me home. And this guy would take me out into his backyard late at night. And he would say to me, Robbie, just don't drink, kid. It's okay. I understand you. I was just like you. You're going to be okay. Look at Rhonda. Look at Brian and Dallas. Look at my home. You're going to be okay. Just don't drink. And he gave me that hope and he gave me that encouragement that I didn't have. I didn't have it. I wanted to just, I'll drink again. I don't care. That's all I know. And this guy showed me that love. And it happened in Kalamazoo. I started staying sober. At 6 months of sobriety, I got my first real job in AA, milking cows. I like milk, but I never really wanted to get that involved with it. But it's 1984 at this point. I figured my sponsor, Don C., got me the job. Oh, you're going, now you old guys are. Oh, you're going to like this job, Rob. Oh, yeah, just go. You'll have a great time, you know, just trying to get us to go to work. And so I go to this farm. It's 1984. I think I'm going to see machines with the buttons. I get there, and all I see is cows in a pail. You know what I mean? And this dude with red hair and about 2.5 teeth, and he says, my name's Claire. You're the new guy. Now, by a show of hands, whoever saw the movie Deliverance with Burt Reynolds? Yeah, man. I saw it too, and I'm thinking, man, it ain't never happened in jail, but it's going to happen here. Straight up. And I'm scared. There's certain things I don't mind doing. That's not one of them. Straight up. And I'm thinking, man, this ain't good. So now all of a sudden, this is where me and the signer get involved. So I get my first cow. And here I go. And he tells me how to do it. And I start going like this with the teats. And I'm really getting into it. I'm really milking this cow. Yeah, she's doing good. Give her some love. So I'm milking this cow in Kalamazoo, Michigan, man, and I'm excited. I'm in AA. I'm 6 months sober. You know how you guys do that to us? You get us all excited. Oh, you're doing good. You're doing good. Great. I think I'm doing good. I'm milking cows. I'm sober. 6 months sober. Everything's going great. I'm milking cows, and I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden it happens. The cow goes to the bathroom right there. Now I'm a bully. I had a little dog. Little choo-choo went out back to go to potty and when I was a kid. There's big pastures. I assume the cow would go out to the pasture at lunchtime. I'm sitting there milking this cow. There's hornets going around my head. There's urine coming out. There's poop coming out. And all I can hear is Bud from the Owner Club saying, things beyond your wildest dreams are going to happen, dude. Oh, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. For the new guy, don't milk cows. When they say to you to do it, just say, no. I'm going to a meeting. Oh. I'm a new guy. I say yes when they ask me to do stuff in AA. And just things from that point in my recovery have just taken off. Life has just taken on new meaning. At about a year of sobriety, I turned myself into the authorities. All right? Because I had a burglary that I was wanted for in Philadelphia. So I'm on the run from the law from Kalamazoo, but a good AA member at the same time. And I get home to Philadelphia. I turn myself into the authorities. I did another year inside a prison on State Road. Sober. Sober. And what did I do inside prison? Thank you. What did I do in prison? I went to meetings, because that's what you're supposed to do. I went to meetings with my big book. And I cared about sobriety. I knew this is what I needed. I knew it was my only way out. And I got done with that final ninth step. And I came out and I went to Wawa, New Jersey. And I became a part of AA. If there's a pig roast, I'm turning the pig, man. If there's an alkathon, I'll do the 3 a.m. meeting. I don't care. I'm involved. About 6 years sober, I finally called home. And I said, Mom, would you mind if I came home for Christmas? It was December 20th of 1989. And there was a silence just like there is here tonight. And she got back onto the phone. She said, son, we were just waiting for you to ask. Oh. 5 days later, December 25th, my little car, my little white Volkswagen Bug with flowers on the doors. I showed up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at 4511 Loring Street. And there was my mom, and there was my dad, and there was my little sister. I hadn't seen her in 10 years. She was married to a guy, and we hugged, and we loved each other. And the only thing I brought home, ladies and gentlemen, was Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all I had, man. I was ready, though, man. I was ready. My pop went. I'm going to talk about him shortly. My dad went upstairs, and he brought down this beautiful bag of gifts for me, the prodigal son. And he kneeled in front of me, and he said, son, welcome home. Welcome home. And I'll tell you, man, from that moment on, I've never even considered having a drink. Never in my whole entire life. Man, I kept on staying sober, man. My little sister called me up about 2 years later, and she said, Robbie, I need you. And she was at her suburban place up in Pensy. And I went up there, and here her and her husband were getting a divorce. And guess what? She cried on my shoulder, man. her big brother for the first time got to be a big brother, man. I was too busy when she was a kid to be a big brother. I just wanted to drink. And now all of a sudden I got a chance to be a big brother because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that meant so much to me, man. It just meant so much to me. And things just kept on happening. At about 10 years of sobriety, I was at a wedding, man. And I met this gal in the front row. We did the electric slide together. You know what I mean? I had an AA girl with me. She had some dude in pre-med school or something with her. I took him. Straight up. And I got a date with her. And she liked me. Go figure. And I got on my, didn't I? I got on one knee and I proposed to you at a big AA getaway weekend. I asked her father, Big Jim. Jim Pirelli. Big Italian guy. Big, he'd talk like this. Big Jim. And I said, Mr. Pirelli, could I marry your daughter? And he thought about it for a minute. Alcoholic car salesman? And he said, yes, you can, son. Yes, you can. And it was just the coolest time of my life. We got married. She's Italian. She had about 750 people there. I had about 5. I did one thing during the wedding. I planned it to be at high noon, one of those Texas cowboy things, you know. She did everything else. That's cool. We had a great time. Got married, and now I'm involved in AA service, man. I'm into it. I told you I'm into it. I do everything they tell me to do. I became a GSR, became a DCM, Correction Facilities Chairperson, you know what I mean, alternate delegate. Then all of a sudden, in 1998, I'm on the assembly floor, and there's my name on the blackboard to be delegate of Southern New Jersey. And I was the last one on the board, man. They erased everybody's names. And I'm like, are they sure who I am? I have to do with 3 months of sobriety. They kicked me out, man. They said, you dude, get out. Your attitudes and behaviors are unbecoming to this club. And with 14 years of sobriety, 250 people in Southern New Jersey said, we want you to lead us at the General Service Conference. And in my second year of being delegate, I don't have good timing. My wife became pregnant. All right, so I'm getting ready, and here's how I find out. I'm getting ready to go to conference, right? I'm getting ready to go to this big meeting, and all of a sudden she said, sit down. That ain't cool, dudes. You know what I mean? When your woman tells you to sit down, you're thinking, okay. So I sat down, and she told me the delegate was going to be a daddy. And the whole General Service Conference had a shower for me. You know that chick thing you got your girls do? A shower. I never had a shower before, but I had a shower. It was cool. And let me tell you something, man. Life was awesome. I got to take my father to Eagles games. I got Eagles season tickets. I took my dad to the games. I ended up getting involved with a radio show down there. Believe it or not, they called me Rowdy Rob. I don't know what that's about. But I ended up being at the stadium before the games and getting the fans all excited about the Eagles. And my dad used to come down to the games with me. And I had the headphones on up there with the radio DJs. And we were outside the stadium and getting everybody going on. And my dad used to be giving me the thumbs up from the crowd, man. I'd be like, yeah, man. And I'll tell you, man, if you had met me then, man, and just like today, man, I wouldn't trade this in for nothing. And I'm nobody special. Nobody special. There's nobody in this room that isn't deserving of God's infinite, awesome love, man. If I can get it, you can get it. Man. And so in 2000, all of a sudden, I'm sharing at the International Conference of Young People. I do a lot of young people's conferences. I got sober when I'm young, and I'm a little crazy and wild. And that's like young people's conferences, right, guys? Any of you young people's in here? And so I'm doing this young people's conference in 2000 in Albuquerque. I know we got a couple people from out that way. And about a week before the conference, a call came from my mother. And she said, son, can you please come over here? Something's wrong with daddy. So I go over there and we get my dad to the hospital real fast. It's 2000, so I got about 89. I got about 17 years of sobriety. And my father had colon cancer. You know, and I'm real close to my pop at this point, right? And it's about a week before the conference, and we're there every night. My mom's sleeping in our house, right, honey? And it's just horrible. And my dad was cognizant when he first came in, and his cardiologist I sponsor, his name is Dr. Mike. And Dr. Mike would keep me posted. He's from my home group. And he would let me know, you know, how dad was doing and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, it was the Wednesday before the conference. And I sat down with my mom and Dr. Mike and my wife, and I said, we just can't go to the conference. I just can't go out there. I got to call the committee because I got to be here for Dad. I know where I belong, and he meant so much to me. And Dr. Mike excused my wife and my mom, and he said, Robbie, when your father came in here, you know he was cognizant, right? And I said, yes, I do. And he said, well, guess what he talked about? And I said, what's that, Mike? And he said, he talked about you and what you do in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and he even told me that you were getting ready to go to Albuquerque, New Mexico to share the message of AA. And he looked me dead in the eye, and my sponsee said to me, go to Albuquerque, I'll keep Dad alive. And so my wife and I hopped on the plane. Yeah, man. My wife and I hopped on the plane the next day, and we went to Albuquerque. I didn't speak a lick about Dad that whole weekend, and I just carried the message on Saturday night at the Albuquerque Convention Center to these young people, and we had a nice conference, and I came home, and there it was. And Mom said to me, we were in the room with my pop, and he's on that thing, and, you know, and the thing's in his mouth and all. And my mom said, what do you want to do, son? And I said, what do you mean, what do I want to do? She said, what do you want to do? Daddy would want to live like this. She asked me. And I said, whatever you want to do, Mom. And we called Dr. Mike in and the nurses, and they unplugged my pop's stuff. And I held my father's hand and my mom's hand, and we watched my father pass into the ages as his vitals went down. And at that point, with about 17 years of sobriety, my mom hugged me, man. And she hugged me, and I'll never forget this. And she said, thank you so much, son, for being here for me during this really rough time. I love you. And that just meant so much to me, man. That's Alcoholics Anonymous, straight up. At the time, I was the co-chair of our state convention. You know what I mean? So I'm busy, man. I'm a busy AA member. I'm busy. I get on with this thing. I'm the co-chair of the convention. And that Sunday was our big meeting. And I couldn't go. You know, I had to be there for my mom, and we had to, you know, do all the arrangements for my pop. And that Sunday night is when we laid my pop out in Philadelphia, where I grew up at, about an hour and 45 minutes away from where we're from in Jersey. And that Sunday night, the whole convention committee came to pay respects to my pop and to support me. The whole convention committee. If you've never been involved in a committee, ladies and gentlemen, if you're one of those people who say, yeah, they'll do it, I think I'll just go and have a cup of coffee. Don't cheat yourself. Get one of these ribbons on somehow, some way. Find somebody that's like me, that's involved in AA, and grab onto their coattails and say, okay, I'll go to that assembly on Sunday. Okay, I'll go to that intergroup meeting on Wednesday night. Okay, I'll go to that convention committee meeting on Sunday night. I'll see what it's about. Don't listen to the people that say that's just politics. We don't gotta do that crap. I work the two steps. I do the first and 12. I don't drink it. I help the whole world, and I'm totally miserable. Come with me. Don't listen to those people. Run like the Dickens. And find people like us that are involved in AA and that love AA from the bottom of our souls. Oh, AA just so rocks. I'm going to end with this story. It's about the enthusiastic glob of clay. I love this story. There's this little glob of clay, and it just sat on this table. And every day the potter came into his store, and he looked at this glob of clay. And this glob of clay just sat there and didn't do nothing with him. Now this glob of clay, I got to have you know, would always look around the room in this nice little potter store. And he'd see these shiny, glistening, painted pots. And he said to himself, someday, Mr. Potter Man going to pick me up and going to make me one of those painted, shiny, glistening pots. And he knew it. He had faith. Like we got to have an AA. And every day that potter came in, on every day he walked right by him. And the clay went, and every day the potter came in, he went, and finally the day came. And that little clay was just sitting there grabbing clay. And all of a sudden he got picked up. And he got excited. You know, like we do in AA. You know, he just got excited. He's getting ready to be molded by God. You know what I mean? And this potter starts molding him. And starts kneading him. And the clay's like, those pots don't look that good, man. Oh, this hurts. Oh, I think I... And finally the potter got done. And was like, okay, cool. I like being gray, and I like being just a slab. You know what I mean? You know how we get when we start these steps to try to be like these old timers? Like, I think I got a little bit too much into this sponsor. I kind of like just not drinking, going to meetings. It was a little bit easier. So all of a sudden, he gets put in this big vat. You know, that thing that goes around. And all of a sudden, the potter's, it's going around, and the little thing's going, oh, this sucks, man. Oh, you know? know, third, fourth, and fifth step. You know, you're getting molded by your sponsor and by God, and it's not fun. Much more sober than you wanted to get, and you're getting molded. Now, straight up, you know, I just want to stay out of prison personally. So anyway, they get this, so that all of a sudden the potter puts him on the table. Now he's just a gray, what looks to be a pot. And he looks at him and he says, okay, I'm cool. You know how you get after you're done 6 and 7. I'm cool now. I got my defects and my shirt comes out of the way. I think I'll just sit here for a while. You know, I don't want to pay nobody back. So anyway, all of a sudden the potter puts him in the oven. You know, he's going to mold them in the pots, and they're like, let me out. You know, you're doing 8th and 9th. It's tough. You're starting to do 10 and starting to say you're wrong. You know what I mean? It's tough. You know, remember that? Like Fonzie on Happy Days, I was wrong. Yelling on people can say it well. We don't know how to say that. And he's like, let me out. And finally, he lets him out. And now we're on 11, 12. And he's getting painted, and he's getting glistening, and he can't breathe, and now it's just horrible. You're learning how to meet this God, and you're helping others, and you're going to prisons, and people are yelling at you, and you don't know what to do, and you're in assemblies, and trying to get 2 people to agree, let alone 200, it's impossible, and it's just a horrible way to live, you know, doing these steps, and doing it the way you're supposed to do it. And all of a sudden, he got put on the shelf, and there was a mirror, and he started looking at himself in the mirror, and there was a painted, shiny, glistening pot. And it was work. It was tough. See, when I came into AA, I saw you shiny painted pots. I saw you here. I saw you in your beautiful dresses and your made-up hair and your nice nails. And I saw you men in your sport jackets and your ties. And I saw you and I saw you. I saw you shiny pots and I wanted to be like you, you know. And I never thought it was going to happen. And I asked and I asked. And finally a sponsor picked me up. And he took me through these 12 steps to freedom. And it wasn't fun, but I swear to you, you have to do them. It's the only way to go. And I went through them one day at a time, and I came out on the other end. And today I get to speak every once in a while. Today I get to sponsor guys in my home group through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an event you don't want to miss. This is the best thing that's ever happened to a young guy like me. So if you're sitting here, you're sitting here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You're at the Gopher State Roundup, and you're on step none. It's time. There's a speaker. It's time. It's time. It's time. It's time to say, okay, I want what you got, and I'm willing to go to any length to get it. Whatever I got to do next, sponsor, I will do. You know, I will do it. What do you want me to do? Do I got to go to prison? I'll go. Do I got to go to jail? I'll go. Do I got to go to rehab? Do I got to go to an intergroup? Do I got to go to an assembly? Do I got to chair a meeting? Do I got to make coffee? Do I got to be on the committee? I'll do it. I'm going to join AA. I want to be one of the tribe. And if us guys and girls have been sober for a little while, if there's only one person here tonight that gets that message, and you make a decision to join us, I didn't say just go to meetings and don't drink. If you make a decision to join us, to get involved right in the middle, because we can save lives in here. Us alcoholics, we can transform lives, not just our own, but other people's. So if you want what we got, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, please join the tribe. Thank you, Gopher State.